Hello and welcome to another edition of Turned Out a Punk Footnotes. I am one of your hosts, Damian Abraham, and your other host, as always, is my buddy and your buddy, all of our buddy, Chris O'Toole. Chris, how are you doing, bud?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. I had a really fun weekend in New York.
Nice.
Doing, I guess something I'm not supposed to really talk about yet, but I will talk about it in the future. But it's definitely something that was very cool and very interesting. And this is something I should have talked to you about before, Chris. This is something I definitely should have filled you in before. But as I said, we'll have something in the debrief about this between you and me.
sure, yeah.
But I did get an excuse to go to Almost Ready Records in Brooklyn, which I had never been to before, but I'm a rabid follower of the Instagram, and I picked up some singles, and it's a ridiculous store, Chris.
I have not been, nor do I follow their stuff. I got to get on that.
It's a good gram. It's definitely a lot of that that sweet punk record collecting pornography that we love.
So the store is called what again?
Almost Ready Records.
Almost Ready Records.
Yeah.
Nice.
And he put out, a cool new reissue. Well, go on, Tris. Go on. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, because I always try to, when I go there, like in whatever New York or the area, I always try to hit up different spots if I can go to them. Anyway, go on.
It's the same guy that did Sing Sing Records.
Okay, cool.
You know that reissue label?
Yeah.
But now he does Almost Ready Records, which has put out a brand new single by this band, the Trash Monkeys, which is the pre-Hairy Pussy punk band. So before, I don't know if you're familiar with the band. Nice. I know you're familiar with the band Hairy Pussy, of course, Chris, but for listeners who aren't, they're a very interesting band.
Yeah.
But there was a pre-Hairy Pussy kind of punk band that's phenomenal. It is awesome.
Cool. And what year is it?
I guess it's like, it must be, he told me, and I don't think it's got the date on it. Let me just quickly check if it has a year. I think it's early 80s, definitely. Maybe mid-80s.
Saying here, Trash Monkeys. Yeah, released in 2017 October.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're right, it doesn't have any, I don't have any deets in the actual.
Go to compilations, because they did some comp appearances, so maybe it'll say in the compilation appearances.
Let me see here. It says, Trash Monkeys, punk rock from Miami, Florida, and formed in 86.
Okay, so late 80s. So,
yeah. Just trying to find compilations. Yeah, both of them was some kind of obviously reissue. Oh, no, it's a weird Killed by Florida man. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, so it's like mid to late 80s, yeah.
A phenomenal release. Strongly recommend picking it up. Oh, man, I want to get this tape with this Trash Monkey stuff on it.
Anyway. I like how quickly we got to the deep dive already. Go on.
Yeah, exactly. Picked up some other records there. Recommend checking that store out if you are in the vicinity. It's in Red Hook, Brooklyn, so it's a little bit further of a trek than, unless you live in Red Hook, of course, but than I had made before, so I used this TV show that I was doing as an excuse to go there.
Nice.
And then I got to go live out a fantasy, Chris. Live out a fantasy. I went to the Best Show.
Nice.
In studio for the Best Show. And it was a dream come true. Pat Dudio, Mary was also there as well, who has a brand new tape. Of course, Mary Houlihan. It's a very funny tape called Dream Phone. Strongly recommend picking it up. Tom Sharpling, of course, was there. AP Mike was there. And it was like the fulfillment of 17 years of desire.
So, because I was actually it was one of the times when I was with you in New York.
Yes.
Was when we went and did the live one, which of course he, Tom was on.
Mm-hmm.
And previous to that, we went and did the other interview. How similar to the, well, obviously the best show is its own thing, but how similar to the experience was what we did at the live one?
Oh, very different. Like there, it's for like a, like obviously we're all podcasts, but their level is like on another level. Like it's going to like a professional recording studio, you know?
Gotcha.
Even at wind guards, like spit guards on their mics.
So were they, is that, that's live, right? It's not like pre-recorded things?
No, it's totally live. Yeah. And it was, it's amazing. Like I was talking with a friend of mine just before we got on the phone to do this, Chris, and you got to think like, you know, SNL has been going obviously a very long time, but there's different writing teams. They've taken breaks, but like Tom's been doing this show for, you know, 20 years almost now, you know, consistently, yep. Like taking some time off here and there, but like fairly consistently. And him and John have been doing bits together for like weeks for 20 years. It's like crazy.
Yep.
It's crazy to think. That's probably got to be very, one of the very funny. Ones.
The thing I'll say about Tom Schraepling, having doesn't know him but has met him via you, I was aware of his show, obviously, aware of the best show, and even appearances he did on other things. But in person, I find him to be like, he's funny on the show, but he is hilarious in real life, I feel. Like, oh, really, really funny guy.
Oh, very funny person.
It comes across because he plays it on the show very well, but even just, he's just a very naturally funny kind of curmudgeon type. It's great. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Very funny guy. And it was an amazing experience. I really, you know, I will cherish that forever. Got to finally get some rare best show vinyl that I've been looking for. I had a really great trip. It was a really fun time going down to New York City. Very briefly. I think I was there for like 24 hours in total, but
well, it was 24. That was 48, but yeah, cool.
I mean, it was 48 in total, but and how about you? You went to a show last week.
Mm-hmm. I was in your fair city and went to go see a traveling punk rock group known as Cadaver Dog from Denver, and they were excellent. And I'm trying to think who else was on the show. A couple locals. I cannot pronounce one of their names. For life of me, I feel bad. And yeah, anyway, it was a good show. But Cadaver Dog was the band I went to see.
Awesome.
And they were great. Yeah. And they have a record on Youth Attack. I highly recommend it. Go check it out. It just came out. It's called Dying Breed. Yeah. So I don't know. Another, like, you know, show. I was, yeah, I had it off, which is a rarity lately. My days are wanting for when I can go do things socially, so it lined up nicely.
No, oh, that worked out well. I'm glad. I'm sorry I didn't get to see you when you were in town. But
yeah, it's funny. You called me, or you called me when I was in town.
I called That's you, right. Yeah, to see what you were doing, and you were like, oh, "I'm in town," and I'm like, "Oh, I'm leaving."
It's actually, I was right by your house too. That's why it was funny when you called me.
Yeah,
because I thought, "Oh, sweet, we'll hang out." Like, I'm in wherever. I was like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like two shifts passing in the night again, Chris.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank God we have this podcast.
Of course. Yeah, that does help the communication for sure.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, I guess we should dive into today's episode, right?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
So let's start her off. First of all, you didn't do your plugs yet, I don't think, did you?
Oh, well, if you want to get in touch with me, you can find me on various forms of social media at Left 4 Damien. If you would like to support this show, the best way to do that is by subscribing to it on iTunes, writing a review, and rating it. And if you would like to send an email to the show, how do they do that, Chris?
To this show here.
This show here.
It's turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com. But as well, Damien, you also have
Let's not confuse them now. Let's just plug that one.
Okay,
on this
okay. All right, turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com. There you go.
And if you would like to follow us on Facebook, there's a Facebook page run by my brother and show producer, Tristan Abraham, and he will get the messages to us, and we can communicate that way. But I think,
sure.
I guess that's it. Should we dive into today's show? Is there news off the top, Chris?
There's nothing that came across my desk, so to speak, but I haven't really been connected much lately. So I don't know if there's anything you know about, but offhand, I can't think of anything right now.
Well, at the risk of forgetting anything, let's forget everything.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll get to it if we don't get to it today. We'll get to it next week or whatever as well. So it's not a big
deal. Yeah, exactly.
We'll get to it.
We're going to keep this one a little bit brief because it is late and Chris and I both have long days behind us now. And but you could be listening to this in the morning. So like we have long days ahead of us now if you're listening to this.
Yes.
Or if you're listening in the middle of the day, we're in the middle of long days. And so we'll keep this a little bit shorter. We're going to keep the mailbag to just a couple messages, and then we'll move on to what I'm going to say right now is looking like the most popular episode ever of Turned Out of Punk.
Oh yeah, really? It's already have you been able to verify that?
Well, 100%? It charted actually in like the iTunes charts very high. Like broke the top
nice. 10
and stuff, and it was doing. It had some, it was very popular with people wanting to check this out. Obviously, you know, he's a very popular actor, so that makes complete sense. But I would also say this is one of the best episodes, even if Jack had only ever, just sung a song on a Probot record, and that was his only credit. You know, he's a really fun person to talk to, and this was a really fun episode.
I agree. It was a great listen. I've always been amused by him, so I was very excited to hear what you were going to be able to pull out of him as far as the punk thing was concerned.
Well, we got more evidence to get to today because I think I think there's going to be more stuff to dissect today because there's more evidence. Anyway, but let's get to – I think we have another email to get to off the top, right, Chris?
Yeah. So first email here related to the episode –
let's do the other email first, right? Because the other email is not related to the episode.
The other email is regards to the you caring, whatever you want to call it, the posting. I don't know how to phrase that. That's the other email.
Yeah, let's do that one first.
Yeah, sure thing. So a listener wrote in. I got it here. I was trying to find the original email. Pardon me. I was queued up for the other one. That's why
sorry I'm a about lot. That. No, I meant sorts. To. I was thinking we could just do that.
And no, that's all right.
Go right into the app.
Yeah. So a listener wrote in. Well, you. But I'm trying to find who sent you originally. Is it your brother or someone else? Not someone who wrote in with this.
I was into the Facebook.
Well, anyway, Tristan wrote in, but it's someone here wrote in and sent it to Tristan. I believe initially to forward it our way. But someone named Deb Inglis, who is not well apparently, but she used to do a zine called Corpus, and there is currently a You Caring link up, and I'll try to find the info for it right now. I had it queued up. Here we go. And it is listed here. Let me see. And it's basically friends and people who – well, friends of – of various sources. They want to raise money for her in this troubled time. They're fairly close. There's 4 days remaining on it as of this. You're putting this up, I believe, on Friday, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there will be 4 days left remaining once this goes up. And they're about $700, $600, pardon me, from their goal, just shy. And essentially, they want to make a limited run of a 7-inch record that will be by a group called Bad Breed, and then it somehow the profits would go along to helping with any contribution to her ailment, what have you. And that's the actual link for it. I'm just trying to find if I can find one that's a little less convoluted. But anyway, it's youcaring.com/CAMH-1. 112-1045. But if you were to search donate to CAMH with the Deb Inglis tribute record, it's calling. And that was the other email that we had.
Okay, excellent. Okay, so check. I think Tristan's going to probably post that on the Facebook as well.
Yeah.
If you want to check that out over there if you are a Facebook user. And if not, we also have a Tumblr page, turnedupunk.tumblr.com. So I'm sure it'll be cross posted, hopefully. So please send in some emails to us because we do enjoy getting emails on the show. But as we said, we're keeping it shorter this week. So now we're going to get into the email that does pertain to the Jack Black episode. First of all, I guess we should tee this episode up. Jack is, someone I got to meet on that Foo Fighters tour that we did with Fucked Up in 2008, I guess. Maybe it was a little later, 2009, maybe 10. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
I'm trying to remember, but anyway, he was he was super cool. He was amazing to us on that tour. A real friendly guy, very welcoming, on the first day, hey, if there's any time you want to come to our dressing room and get something, please do. Because we had a good rider on that tour. It wasn't like the Foo Fighters didn't take care of us, but we didn't realize you could put, ridiculous shit on your rider that they would import from other countries for you. Surprisingly, root beer was not easy to find in Australia, but they were importing root beer for Tenacious D because it was on their rider. From Malaysia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they had root beer. They had all sorts of crazy stuff on their rider and they were just like, yeah, take him whatever you want. So he was super cool, very, welcoming to us and things like that. And, but once again, straight up lied to me about not being in a punk, And, and that never sat right with me because if there's one thing I've come to learn is that, most people that are doing something cool now had at least a dabbling in a punk period.
That's the overall theme of the show.
That's a thesis, right? Yeah. So it never really sat right with me that Jack was not a punk, as he said, or never into punk music and was only into metal and, and then indie stuff. Especially if someone's into indie stuff and metal, there has to be a punk period to bridge that gap, I think.
Well, I think maybe his concern, I don't know about in person, but as of the interview would at least tell, is that it was more of a, I cannot speak for him, but I would say that it's more his concern that he doesn't want to say that he is out of fear of it appearing like he doesn't know enough. It's almost like he doesn't feel like he knows enough or whatever to claim that title, so to speak. Yeah, that's the impression I got anyway.
That's definitely true. And I get that from a lot of people that I approach to come on the show, but I think that's because no one knows enough, there's shit that Nardwar doesn't know that Chris Minicucci knows. And I'm sure there's shit that Chris Minicucci doesn't know that Nardwar knows, And I'm sure there's stuff that random Mr. Gazame that I follow on Instagram who posts ridiculously sick Mexican punk videos knows that neither of those two know. That's the thing is about punk. It's just everyone's experience is so unique to them. And that's why I think I love doing these interviews is because everyone's experience is so unique to them. So everyone's story is going to be different. And I think even if you had just a short window listening to this music, it does affect you, it affected me, and I think it affects most people that I know. Definitely affected Jack.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think you kind of pulled that out of him. I just that's my only assumption based on what he says in the interview with you. But I don't know why in person he wouldn't have been more forthright. Who knows? That's funny though.
Yeah, no, he was. But he's funny. He's funny, and I'm glad it worked out this way because it led to this episode. And
nice.
Man, what a payoff this was for me. So I think we should dive into this episode, Chris. I think we should save the email till we get to that point, which I think we'll definitely get.
Okay, sure thing.
And
sounds good.
I was going to say, though, we did get an email from one of our contributors about this episode, Mr. David Up. But I don't think there's anything he offers to get into as a nope. So why don't we just start with yourself?
All right. Talking point, you mean, on the episode is what you're saying?
Yeah, sorry, that made no sense at all because I'm trying to look at this email while I'm trying to communicate to you.
That's all right.
Can you, why don't you pick a talking point that you want to start off with,
Chris? Okay, so let's try. And the obvious one is to talk about Devo, but I'm going to try and pick one. We will go there.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try and pick something a little.
Well, why don't we go Devo first? Because that's like
the center to start.
Well, because it's chronological and through the episode, and like, you know, there's no point in avoiding unless you do want to go to something else before Devo.
No, it's fine. Devo is good. We can start at Devo. So regarding Devo, I love that he loves Devo, of course. Devo are excellent. The one funny thing I'm looking at here when I'm gazing at the resource, I didn't realize they had an alias called the Wipeouters.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Which I think is funny. Alter alias, yeah. Just looking here to see if it's like actually a thing. Weird. It's like these appearances. Anyway, but yeah, Devo. So the record, I can't remember if he – what record did he actually cite in the interview? I can't remember.
Freedom of Choice. Did he even cite a record?
Oh, he did. That's right. Because his brother, right, he said worked on that?
Yeah, his brother came up with the whip sound on Whip It.
The Whip It sound. Well, there we go. Yeah, so – which in and of itself is an insane, kind of amazing little tidbit for the show, I think. because as people, I think most people know that song, but most people sort of our ilk, although of course it is their, you know, big song or what have you. Mm-hmm. But it's highly memorable, and that part of the song is quite funny, does, you know, in a way make the song. So it is kind of funny that he knows or whatever was aware of that. And I think that's an amazing intro point. For like an early, I don't know if it was his first concert, did he say, or it was definitely an early concert.
It was his first concert, I think he said.
That's crazy. So yeah, anyway, great record.
Yeah.
Which is wild. But yeah, so Freedom of Choice, great record. Used to see it all the time in the heyday at lovely like flea market things. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen them come up so much lately. But yeah, I don't know what to talk about with Devo. They're amazing.
I think
We Not Men?
I think there's
great record.
I think there's like one of those bands that doesn't get enough, like, I don't know, get enough credit. They definitely get credit for their innovation and things like that, but just like their level of cynicism and their level of just like, you know, like Devo wasn't trying to make fun music. They were almost like trying to make anti-people music. And it just happened.
I agree.
People just were able to dance to it.
Well, I think that's what's funny in hindsight now is that people would not, or they don't like if you, what's the word I'm looking for? The disassociation based on the perception of Devo is different than the actuality in the moment, at least. Mm-hmm. And even just the idea that like Devo was even such a cultural phenomenon in the early years that was like a ridicule. Mm-hmm. Like an insult for people calling weird people Devos.
Devo.
Because the assumption was that it's this like a weirdo into, you know, this silly nonsense or whatever. But yeah, you're right. I think their cynicism is something that I find really, really intriguing and commendable.
They're like one of those bands that they're just like, I don't know, so cool. Like that Hardcore Devo compilation series is amazing. There's two volumes, and then there's like a live volume from that kind of era of stuff that Ryko put out. You can hear all this shit on the internet now, though, so it's out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like they were really ahead of the game, you know, and it's still like shocking, like to think that they just like came out of seemingly nowhere, you know, like there's nothing that really sounds like them. Like, you know, it's so much more, I don't know, it's like different than that Euro, like, you know, Krautrock stuff that was happening or like Kraftwerk. Like it's got like, it comes from a different place.
Yeah. I think there's more life to it as well. Not to throw any shade. I love Kraftwerk, but it's not as, like they knew what they were doing, but it's, I don't know. Again, it's Kraftwerk for me, to me, doesn't have that like punk sensibility. It's mm-hmm. not to say it's worse, but whereas Devo really kind of, to me, always kind of did. I think the aesthetic, even that Devo aesthetic, as bizarre as it is, especially to kind of, now we know of a world post that aesthetic, so there, it's, there's references to it, but for that to come out in 78 or whatever it was, or earlier, you know, it's kind of a wild thing to do. And I think that is in league with like a proper weirdo band that's like really doesn't care and really wants to do what they want to do. So, yeah.
And like,
anyway, I don't know. I don't.
Have you watched that movie ever?
Which movie? The Doc?
No, the Devo things they used to make, the videos they used to show. The Buju Boy. What's it called?
No, never seen it.
It's really disturbing. It's like Eraserhead kind of vibes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because he's, well, is it what he was describing was accompanying them live at the time?
Yeah. Yeah, and you can find it. It was on, they released it as a video back in the day, and then there were like bootlegs floating around. We used to have a bootleg out of the video store I worked at.
See what's here. What is it? It's no, I'm just trying to find it.
Maybe Men Who
Devolution Men? No, that's all. I don't know.
No.
I'm trying to find.
It's on.
Weird. I wonder.
I wonder if it's on this. If they say what's on these. No, these are just like live tapes and stuff.
Weird. Yeah, I haven't seen it though.
Yeah, The Complete Truth About De-Evolution. I think that's the name of it. And I think these are the DVDs that have it all on there. Anyway, I'm probably getting this all wrong. Someone's going to like write in and be like, you got it all fucking wrong.
Anyway, if anyone knows, but yeah, I'm trying to find Complete Truth About De-Evolution is what you think. Yeah, from 93.
Yeah, that's got other. It's just like a compilation of two other tapes.
Weird.
Anyway.
Either way, if anyone knows, let us know, write in, and chastise us for being terrible at that reference. Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that's like, you know, once again, it's like, it's amazing how people are some of their influences and stuff like that. But like, given how zany and weird Zach's sense of humor, Zach, sorry, Jack's sense of humor is, and you know, it makes sense that he, you know, Devo would be his entry point.
Well, I think it's just kind of fitting, though, that it wasn't like, you know, and almost in a way wasn't his doing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think that makes it more interesting. It makes me wonder if the Devo influence like seeped into his brain and made him the, you know, the comedic powerhouse that he is or whatever.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like it's amazing how, you know, in that story that he's telling about, like, you know, you can tell he's got that mind picking up like comic details, like that story about the guys breaking into his locker to steal the Devo record.
That was really funny. Him talking about like falsifying the signatures or whatever.
Yeah.
Really clever. Yeah.
I guess next point that I guess would be my turn, or I kind of stole your point there, Chris. So if you want to go to your
go, whatever. Let me see what we got. Well, I'm just trying to pull from something here. Let's just shout out briefly on his journey. Ozzy Osbourne, Blizzard of Oz is a great record.
Mm-hmm.
So I was feeling that for sure.
Mr. Crowley song is probably my favorite song on that record that I put on the, oh, by the way, I should plug this. There are Spotify playlists that I make for each of these episodes, including this episode that are up there. And I put Mr. Crowley on as the Ozzy Osbourne song, and it is fucking sick.
It is a great song. There is some other controversial, one controversial song on that record too.
Which isn't really that controversial when you actually like listen to the lyrics and read the lyrics.
No, it's not. But it was a focus of some controversy, I guess what I should say, for a time. Anyway, great record if you don't know it, for the metalheads or whatever. Not a deep cut, but great record nonetheless. The point I'm going to bring up, I believe, because most first and foremost, I know it will annoy Dave Martin to no end, as much as we love him, and I don't understand why he doesn't like this group. I'm pretty positive. But I loved all the Frank Black talk on this episode and all of the shout-outs and love for Frank Black. I mean, of course, related to the Pixies, but the part where you two start kind of gushing about how great his solo records are is immensely accurate, and I thought it was very apt that he said that the Breeders even got more love than the Frank Black solo stuff, and I agree, and I don't think that's correct. So in honor of that, I think we should just give a little talk regarding Frank Black solo, if you're down.
I wouldn't say this. I would go a step further than you. I'd say Frank Black solo stuff is way better than all the Pixies catalog to me.
Of course, you have the contrary opinion. Yeah.
Because Pixies records, difficult. There's like a lot of goofy-ass songs on those records. Like, there's a lot of cool songs, but there's like just like a lot of like zany songs.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think there's still those that exist on his records too, but regardless, it's hard to do that argument for me because I like both groups. Well, Pixies, of course, I like quite a bit. But so to kind of say one of the other is difficult for me in this moment. But what I will give specific love to is his first record, which was incredible, of course. Frank Black, self-titled, from 93.
I would and say the second record is even better.
It is even better. You are correct.
For me. I didn't mean to put down your choice if your choice was the first record.
No, that's cool. I ride hard for that second record, like you're saying. I just want to make sure that the second record. What is this Frank Black session? I haven't even heard this.
Whoa, yeah.
Weird.
I'm catching up to you.
Yeah. Anyway, this 94, but.
Yeah, what is this Black session?
Seems to be. It's weird because it's got some stuff from the second record on it. Freedom Rocks on it. So it must be. It's like a promo thing. It's
yeah,
like,
definitely.
Maybe a European-only promo thing?
Yeah,
anyway,
it's France.
Okay. We got sidebarred, but the second record, Teenager of the Year, of course, with the smash hit Headache.
And then actually, which, Cult of Ray, I think one of my favorite singles ever released in the 90s is Men in Black.
Men in Black, yep. I beat you to it. Well, we said it in unison, but yeah. I saw him on this tour, 96. Cult of Ray is indeed an incredible record, beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
This is all pre-Catholic stuff too that we're discussing. It gets mm-hmm. brought up in the interview where I think it's either you or him that mentions the Catholics specifically. But these records, even the ones, yeah, like he has. I think with the Catholics, I think he only did two records, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it's the two.
Yeah,
I think that band backed him up for a longer time than those two records.
Could be, but they're not credited, at least, on these records we're talking about. Yeah. I feel like it was after Cult of Ray that came about. So I believe, I'm just going to guess here, that his backing band changed after 96 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to find that. Why can't I find the Catholics separated here on the resource? Weird. Anyway,
if you go to
great records.
Credits and you go through his credits, you'll find it.
Ah, okay. But yeah, so of the first three, I don't know. That's a tough one. What would I say is the best of the first three? It's hard to mess with the first two because they're so good and they were so – it was such a nice thing to see him have records out again. But Cult of Ray, you're right. Men in Black, hell of a single.
Mm-hmm.
And it had the weird – wasn't it on like the X-Files movie too, I feel like, or something silly? They put it on one of those like bad 90s things. Not that X-Files is bad per se, but I thought I had some weird association with that. Like they used it on that like show or something, like one of those weird soundtracks.
It might have done
anyway.
That makes sense, but it definitely kills Will Smith's Men in Black.
True. But yeah, great records. I feel that these, maybe not the first record, even the second record, so highly underrated, but I feel Cult of Ray is like a massively mm-hmm. underrated record. I think the Catholics record, the first one especially, is highly underrated also, which is just self-titled Frank Black and the Catholics. Came out on Spin Art, but was released in Canada by the lovely Sonic Onion in 98.
Mm-hmm.
And has a hell of a cover on it as well. But yeah, fantastic record. Anyway, I cannot speak highly enough of these Frank Black records. And the Catholics did not just do two records. My recollection is terrible. He did seven records. Three, four, seven records. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Ending in 20. Well, I guess it's a live record, so we're not going to count that. So, yeah, he's in and out with them. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 records, 6 LPs.
With the Catholics.
Amazing.
And they're all
with the Catholics. And that they are great. And even the last one that isn't the live record, Show Me Your Tears on Cooking Vinyl in 2003, is phenomenal also. And all of these records are great. And it's kind of crazy that a guy has done this many LPs now that I look at them and I remember the covers. I'm like, oh, yeah. But that first one I feel is quite special. They're all great. Anyway, that's my little probably making Dave Martin shake his fist in anger at the sky right now. Go on.
And also that song Chinese Fire Drill is fucking awesome on that Powerball Tugboat record.
You said Ball it wrong again.
Ball Hog Tugboat.
There you go. Yes.
That record is killer.
Ball Hog Tugboat, of course, Mike Watt.
I'm How about on vinyl? The actual...
I think we've talked about this before, but that is cool. What I like... I thought that that had such great imagery. Like when it came out, I remember seeing like the promo posters everywhere for it in record stores, at the cool record stores, I should say. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it came out in 95 on Columbia in America. And yeah, and you, as you say, Chinese Fire Drill, featuring I believe Frank Black, if I remember correctly,
yeah,
which I believe you showed out in the, yeah. And it was reissued on vinyl, double LP, 180 gram. Can you believe it? In 2016. There you go. But you have an OG, you said?
Yeah, like it's on. I don't think it's that expensive. It's like, well, it's like, you know, all those 90s records go for money now because I guess they're not pressed that much for, but like, that much for, sorry. They weren't, they didn't press that many of them.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, like I got it at a used record store not that long ago, and it was one of my happiest finds ever because this record is, yeah, this was like my Rosetta Stone for getting into music. Like I just was like poring over this thing, you know, and I'd be like, okay, this guy, like look at the look at the lineup for
this. Yeah, it's thing. Crazy. Credits are nuts. I was just thinking right now, you know how there's that, I'm trying to remember if it's, is it 6 degrees or 5 degrees from Kevin Bacon, that game?
Yeah.
Is it 6 degrees?
It's 7 degrees. Isn't it 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon? 8 degrees
I don't
Kevin
know.
Bacon?
It's one of those one of those things. We used to actually play it all the time on tour, but yeah. I can't remember what the number is. Anyway, anyone who understands what I'm saying knows it. But I believe this Ball Hog record could be for like, you know, whatever, indie underground music, whatever you want to say. This is the Kevin Bacon of that. Because if you can't eventually trace someone back to this record via whatever, 5, 6, 7 steps, I believe that's probably, it's doable. It's got so many people on it. So that's my observation.
I was going to say there's actually a teacher at Holden School and Dorian School, my kid's school, that plays on this record.
See? That's my point.
So there you go. I guess we should move on to another point.
It's yours. That was mine.
All right. I'm
Unless
get
you
in.
Wanted to take that Mike Watt as your second point.
Well, we could. Yeah, we could. Were you a fan of Firehose at all?
Yeah, like I like Firehose. I recall their presence on skate videos. Of course, Mike Watt's specter looms very large, and especially in like 90s skateboarding. But yeah. I can't ever claim to be like a giant Firehose guy. I always thought like the aesthetic was cool. And I have not listened to the records in a very long time, only ever really heard things in passing. So I can't verify what I felt in the interview was one of the most amazing parts, which are you going to bring up?
What were you bringing up?
Well, I think this is a great idea, and it's the needle drop test, which I thought was an incredible concept that I don't know why I never thought of before, which is taking whatever record. In this case, he talks about it being Firehose, although I can't remember what record he was saying it, the Firehose record it was. But that anywhere you drop the needle randomly, it's just always an amazing part. And I never thought of that as criteria for like, you know, making a great record. Like the greatest records are all that, where you drop it at any point and it's always
killer.
Great.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, really funny, clever way of analyzing a record.
Yeah, like you know, with Firehose in particular, like that's a band that I think it's a sound that, you know, like if it's bombastic no matter where you listen to it on those records. Like maybe it's the last track I think on the record he mentions even that sounds different. Like everything else is definitely like, it's like the mo, it's like a more bass driven Minutemen.
Yeah, that's a, I never thought of that way to say it, but yeah, I remember like very, very vividly that when Fly in the Flannel came out in 91, there was like ads in Thrasher and like burned in my memory. Mm-hmm. So the idea of Firehose synonymous with has always been in my brain since that year, which was a while ago now. But yeah, the but yeah, it's funny actually. Almost a record store I frequent got in. I can't remember which one. I believe it was actually the first year. Yeah, I think it was Raging Full On. So I almost took a gamble on getting an OG of that, but I just, I don't know. It wasn't in the air for me that day.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool, the last track like, on that like, record, I think, that I was like digging a lot, which is kind of a different vibe.
Yeah.
Things could turn around. Well, I didn't realize that Kira wrote a lot of stuff on this record.
You talking about the first record again? Like that first LP?
Yeah.
Why are you seeing that? I'm just looking it up now.
Like if you go in and look. See. Kira wrote lyrics on a bunch of the songs.
Hmm.
I think her and Mike Watt, I believe at the time were married. Kira Rossler, of course, was a member of Black Flag, very famously. Also played in Twisted Roots with her brother, Paul. And, she was married to Mike Watt.
The only thing I ever knew was she not, at the time of being in Black Flag, also Henry's partner or whatever in those years, I believe?
Oh, or at least for a time. For a time, yeah.
Yeah. Regardless, yes. But I did not know of her influence with this record either. That's cool.
Yeah, very
cool. See, it's things you learn when browsing the resource at very early hours of the morning talking to you. It is cool to find out, though, yeah.
Too bad we won't remember.
Sadly, this record, yeah, the median price for this record is not all that dear, which is kind of insane to me. Came out in 86. It's not that expensive.
Well, you got to figure they probably pressed, you know.
Yeah, I guess.
Thousands
of these. Still feels like it should be something a little more, whatever.
You're right. You're right. They signed to a major for a while, too. Or in Columbia.
I think that Flying the Flannel record came out in a major for it. Yeah, yep. There we go.
That was the first one.
Because it had like a weird push. Like I said, I remember like Thrasher doing a big thing on it, and not to say they wouldn't have on the other records per se. They may have, but I vividly remember that record getting heavy promotion, at least in that whatever sector.
It's funny because the sound that they played hasn't come back yet, like into vogue. You know, like. Like, they were huge, right? You're talking about, like, in skateboard, like, you know, with younger people, you know, and you'd think, like, everything else, it would have come back into vogue. But it's almost like it that sound just hasn't resurfaced yet.
I can't disprove you, but I feel like that can't be in my brain. It just doesn't feel right. But, yeah, there's nothing I'm trying to think of.
Like, what's something that's popular with, like, a slappy bass sound with that super pushed up to the front?
I don't know. That's a very good question. But yeah, it seems weird to me that I feel perhaps part of the reason, like, certain things of that Mike Watt it's specifically been on hasn't been aped so heavily is because he's kind of a difficult
person
to, like, to imitate on a respectable level. Where it doesn't either sound like so derivative, and if not, I feel like if you're not doing something that's right on the line, then it just seems like it's going to fail.
Yeah.
So perhaps that's why not. I don't know. Maybe. But yeah, you're right. I'm trying to really struggle to think of something that does. But yeah, I can't. Yeah. I can't think of anything. You might be right. I don't understand that.
Yeah. It's I don't know, and I'm sure it will happen someday, but. As of yet, I can't think of someone, but maybe I'm just wrong on that. Maybe there is a band that someone will point out.
But, yes.
Next
again,
point.
Write us. Turn it up on footnotes. Go on.
We get a lot of angry emails.
Yeah.
I guess next point for me I wanted to talk about was I wanted to kind of get into this band, Shower of Smegma.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Jack's friend played in.
Yes, you're going to have to carry this one. I don't know this band, surprisingly.
They are on streaming services right now. Sean Wheatley, who is the person that introduced Jack, of course, to Firehose that he mentions, and later would play in the band Mustard, which you can also check out. That is actually a little bit harder to find, but Shower of Smeg is like available on streaming services.
Okay.
Which is...
I'm looking up on the resource. I found a record released in 2010.
Yep.
I'm assuming it's some kind of a reissue is my guess.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a reissue of kind of like all their demos.
Okay.
And all their various recording sessions that they did.
It's got a cool look to it. Yeah. It's on a record label called punkrecords.com, which is a little bizarre to me, but nonetheless, interesting.
Yeah, and I'm wondering,
what else?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I'm wondering who else these other, like, you know, like, you can find out that this band, like, played with played Justice League. You know, they have this whole bio for them right here. But it's, I don't know, like, this is one of the dudes that played in that band that Jack mentions he did for that movie later on. And it's like, it's kind of sick. So I'm like, maybe this band that Jack did is kind of sick.
I get what you mean, yeah. The, I just realized that label that put this out also put out that Patriots record, like the Guilty Walk Free and Land of the Free. I know that. It's a good record. But I don't know why I forgot this bizarre label. I didn't put out too much. But put out, I don't know, probably 20 albums. But yeah, well, I don't know this group. I had
issues too.
Yeah, they've done a bunch. I remember when friend of us in person, and not the show yet, although I hope one day he will be, but Pete, formerly Hits and Misses, I remember him somehow having a connection to the label, and he provided something for that Patriots reissue, I thought. But there was another connection. Anyway, but yeah, the Shower of Smegma, were you aware of them previous to the Jack connection or no?
Yeah, I remember when this reissue came out, because this label had obviously done a bunch of other reissues. Over the years. I think it was actually this Urban Bandits reissue that they did. That was the first thing that I kind of was... It was definitely not that, because that was only done recently. But if they had... maybe it was this... They did the Welcome to Venice comp or something. And that's when I kind of got hit the label. And then, yeah, I kind of remember when this came out. I had no idea it would have a Jack Black connection at all. But... You know, certainly a band that I was interested in at the time.
Yeah, I love the median age of 14 is in the description. Yeah. Crossover hardcore punk with metal. Played in the LA Hollywood club circuit. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, they played a lot of interesting bands. So, yeah, I could see them being decent based on who they played with, for sure.
It's pretty raging.
But yeah,
you,
I did.
You can check it out.
I will. I got to get on that. I was peaked in the interview, but it kind of slipped out of my mind, as most things do. But yeah, it does look amazing. I got to check out this reissue. And because it's on certain streaming services, maybe I'll look there as well. We'll see.
All right. Well, the band actually made it up to 1988. Started in 83 and made it to 88, which is a 5-year run, which is pretty good.
Although, weirdly enough, never issued any original releases.
They're on these
other
comps.
Than appearances.
Go to their go to the comps, and go to that first comp that they're on. That the lineup's pretty.
Noise Attack cassette comp. Oh yeah, lineup is good on this.
Dude, it's got like Deserter, Slam, Veruca, the Mob.
Yeah. Mob 47.
Yeah. This is actually like Real Enemies on this.
This is crazy. From 85, released in Germany, Noise Attack. Huh. Interesting. But yeah, so they didn't release anything other than comp appearances.
As far as I know, yeah. And I think they might have a demo from back then.
True. I guess the resource doesn't have everything necessarily, so we could there could be a release or two missing here, but that reissue that shows up, at least, is the only thing that's showing from their actual thing. But yeah, that's kind of wild.
Yeah, can't get over.
So they must have played a lot and not released enough. Yeah, you always find the most obscure cassette comps, and then you gush over them. And I just think, like, yeah, to find one of these is going to be difficult.
Dude, this one's for sale. I could buy one right now if I.
Well, hey.
I'm not going to do it, but if I could, I could spend, you know, not that much to get this comp. It's right there. I'm debating putting it in my cart. Anyway.
Yes.
I wish someone reissued this thing. This is a sick, sick lineup. It's got, like, a lot of countries represented. That's the thing about, you got to love about this period of hardcore is how international it was, especially at a time when it was really hard to be international.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think via the whole, like, whatever, like, tape trading and other things like that is maybe why.
Mm-hmm.
And because people who were enthusiastic genuinely needed to reach out to other people in order to kind of hear new things or whatever. But yeah, you are. It is true. In an era where now it's so easy, I feel like it seemed just as much back then as it does now. And it seems like that shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Based on how difficult it would have been or how much time it would have taken.
Yeah.
Very simply.
Dude. Go to the third tape they were on. This is the best one.
Compilation appearances of Shower of Smegma. The tape you are referring to is what? The compilation known as Stepping Stone to Insanity?
Yeah.
And let me see here. Cassette comp. Funeration, Wretched, Direct Action. Is this the Direct Action? Ours? Yep. Or is this another one?
No, that's them.
No, that's ours. Wow.
Wait, you get a little bit further down the list and see who else is on this.
SOS, Powerage, Youth Corps, Deformed,
Powerage is one of my
Infected,
favorites.
Chronic Submission. Nice. Chronic Submission. Yep. How is there so much Toronto on this? This is wild.
I know.
Scapegoats, Cholera, Mob 47 Colera again.
From Brazil.
Cholera, pardon me. I pronounced that wrong.
No, but that's one of my favorites, too, of all time. Like, Mob 47, you know, like, God, like,
yeah,
everyone's
amazing
on this.
Exposes. Oygasm, which is always a band name that's made me laugh. Again, it did. Negative Earth, Sick Things. Yeah, it is pretty crazy. And there are only 40-50 songs on this. No big deal.
Yeah.
In total. Multiple songs by each band. No less than two. And often three or four. But yeah, amazing. It does pretty cool cover too, actually. Stepping Stone to Insanity World Hardcore Compilation. There you have it. Yeah, it does look pretty amazing.
Yeah,
the fact that
get that
two Toronto bands are on this too is kind of wild.
Mm-hmm.
And Damien's favorite first ballot Punk Rock Hall of Fame Wretched are also on it.
And Funeration. They're also early ballot.
Yes. But yes, cool comp released out of the UK, it says. And it has never been sold on Discogs, which, as we know, is both the most encouraging and discouraging sign of our times.
Yeah. I would say more discouraging than encouraging at this point.
Yeah, true. I don't know what's encouraging about that as much. I think about that back. I'm going to erase that one, yeah.
Yeah, because you're not going to find it. You're not going to, especially that. Tapes, forget about it.
Well, hey, at Robbie Brookside, yo.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
I bet you, I guarantee he had that tape. In fact, I'm going to text him.
There we go. This will be the thing now. This will be for next week's revisiting. But yeah, so Stepping Stone to Insanity comp UK 85. My bet is he has this.
I bet he does.
That's
too.
That's my bet.
I bet he does too. Because he.
But let's find out.
Yeah, okay. But I guess we should move on to the next point.
Yeah, sure. What can we go on next?
Well, I guess we could go into the deep dive about this show and re-examine more evidence that's emerged about this photograph in question about whether or not this photograph is, in fact, Jack Black.
Okay, let's do that. So we received a message with regards to this, and we received a couple, actually, but they both work hand in hand. I'm just trying to find the first one, which is from Sid G., and he writes, I can't help but wonder if that photo was from the No Control at the Country Club live show. It was taped at the Reseda Is it County? I think he just, anyway, Country Club in 1998. Mm-hmm. I could imagine Jack going to see Bad Religion, maybe not instead Carrie Nation or Visual Discrimination. The dude next to Jack Black in the judge shirt is Randy Johnson, he writes. From Pushed Aside, Against the Wall, Drift Again, and Ignite. Mm. And he ends the message here by just recounting that at the time when he was young from that era, having a Visual Discrimination shirt, which just had VD on it, and of course, which is also slang for venereal disease, and he was ridiculed at that age by family members and what have you, other older people. And why would they make a shirt like that? He included the actual image of the original shirt too. It looks kind of sick. And also, of course, writes saying that he would like to see Big Frank Harrison, yes, who ran Nemesis, interviewed on the podcast, which of course I would imagine, Damien, you would love to do.
I would definitely. You know, everyone I think knows my thoughts on the great Nemesis Records as one of the great, yep, labels. And he's come up a couple times now as being, you know, kind of pivotal to the journeys of people that have been on the show. So, yeah, there'd be a lot of cool stuff to talk to him about. So hopefully one day. That's the thing about the show. I don't have any plan on stopping it ever because there's a lot more people to talk to.
Yeah, there's another message here. I just want to make sure there's nothing that wasn't covered in that first one. But basically, both sent the flyer for this show, which we should have Tristan put up on the Facebook.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
But basically, the person says that they don't suspect that Visual Discrimination were headlining a show. It's a larger venue. Maybe, yep, his memory is jogged, and it was the Bad Religion gig. What else?
We're going to have Jack on again to ask him if it was Visual Discrimination.
Yep. So, yeah, the flyer for this is kind of funny because it uses the Instead LP art as the background. And then it has Bad Religion, Instead, Visual Discrimination, and Carrie Nation. Just quite the lineup, really, actually.
Oh, it's an amazing lineup. And it makes sense that Jack would have been there, you know, like the Bad Religion thing is, you know, that could have been him.
That's true. I like that people have like found the flyer likely for, regardless of him being in the photo or not, although I do believe maybe it's him now, but, they've traced back the photo to the flyer.
I know.
I think that's clever sleuthing, but yeah, it's, the flyer looks cool either way. Yeah. So it says it was in December 23rd. I don't know what year. 89, it seems like. So, yeah, there we go. So we've got a little more proof of perhaps the situation. This might jog his memory, hopefully, if you ever speak to him again to get to the bottom of this.
Well, yeah, because he told us, you know, he was going to come on in 3 years. So if I don't – so please remind me in 3 years to not forget, A, to interview him, B, to bring this up.
Of course. Well, I don't think you'll forget.
Do you agree with me, Chris, that Tenacious D is one of the great punk supergroups of our time?
I never thought of them in those terms before. As per usual, it's very hard to dismiss your arguments, even if my gut instinct is to disagree with you. So, well, that's my assessment.
We definitely have to agree that the Foo Fighters, maybe not musically, but roster-wise, are the greatest hardcore band supergroup of all time. You know,
I'm trying to think. It's very difficult to disprove this again off the top of my head, but yeah, you have enough connections there.
Yeah, you have Southern California pop punk represented, the Epiphat sound, and also kind of Rat Pack, which kind of is like a mystic vibe.
Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, Pacific Northwest is represented there, yeah, in the form of, you know, like the guy that was in the greatest straight edge band of all time. And if if you count the original drummer, you've got someone who played in a bunch of other Pacific Northwest kind of hardcore bands too. And then you have Dave Grohl, you know, like granted was not in the best lineup of Scream, but played in Dane Bramage and Mission Impossible. and then you got a fucking germ.
Yeah, that's true. The only correct have to make that you just wrote about is, or said, sorry, the Nate didn't play in SSD, didn't play in the greatest edge band to ever exist. Just as a correction.
I think there was probably more straight edge members definitely in Brotherhood than in SST.
That wasn't my comment. My comment was straight edge band, as it is remembered in the histories of time.
Well, okay, as it's remembered in the history.
Not to throw any shade at Brotherhood are incredible. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying. Anyway, yes, your argument is excellent. I can't think of anything to disprove it.
Chris, can you come up with any punk supergroups better roster wise than the Foo Fighters?
Not offhand, I can't. So that is a fair assessment. I am going to again put this to our listeners if they can think of any with as much and or better connections than the Foo Fighters. Yeah, I don't have any.
It doesn't have to be musically too, because we can establish that it doesn't have to have
be different. Yes, we're not discussing the sonic template of the Foo Fighters as being even adjacent, as far as I'm concerned. But yes, so. But yeah, membership wise, it's difficult. Yeah, you're right. It's got a lot of pedigree in those members for sure.
Yeah. Like I think, I don't know, you might have an argument with like an early lineup of like, I'm trying to think, Sam Hain, maybe. Wasn't there like some crazy lineup with that where they had like some like insane people from every band?
But I think your argument works because it's the idea of taking like the Foo Fighters, which are not sort of quote-unquote punk, hardcore, whatever, clearly. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it makes it more interesting. Whereas like Sam Hain is, you know, rooted in it. It's not detached from it. Maybe like even arguably the first like whatever lineups of Danzig. I can't remember who's in the band, but yeah, you're right. I'm trying to think of like a big metal band with enough connections that might disprove that.
Ooh, yeah, but I don't think there is, like, where every member was in like a killer punk hardcore band.
Yeah, even that stuff, you're right.
Like every member.
Hopefully it'll come. Yeah, you're right.
In that first lineup, because I don't think Taylor, you know what, like, you know, now that this Jack Black thing's come out, you know, I wonder if I should go back and, well, no, I would definitely love to interview Taylor, but like, I wonder if he does have a punk past that I just never got to, you know?
Yeah, who knows? That would be interesting.
Yeah, one day, Chris, keep making this goddamn podcast, and one day we'll get to it.
Of course.
I guess also, have you heard about this red blood cells thing?
Red blood cells, the red stripes. Sorry, because that the red blood cells, I believe, or no, it's white blood cells is the record, I think. But no, I thought that was insanely clever, though. I'd never heard tell of that.
Yeah, like
until it was mentioned.
Yeah, he just got the. I guess he just got like in his hat that, or you know, there should be a bass on this record that it could really do with a bass track. So he took it in the studio and cut a bass track for it. And it's sick.
The idea to like, okay. So for the people, I'm assuming everyone has listened to the main interview, but for those who haven't, to give context, this is again, it's what's his name? Stephen McDonald from Red Cross, right? Who did this?
Yeah.
So, and it's what record is it? Is it the white blood cells record?
Yeah, I think that was the big one, right? It was the first big one.
Oh, no. Maybe it's Elephant? But either way, I don't know.
It was before
Elephant. One of these white stripes records, it's either, I'm going to guess, white blood cells or Elephant. Someone can correct us again. Feel free to write in. But one of these big records, he went in and, of course, the White Stripes are a two-piece band that do not have a bass player. So he cut bass. He went in and overdubbed bass over the whole whatever record this is and called it Red Stripes, which I think is also an insanely clever idea and name. And actually, what's funny about this is I think that's something that would be hilarious and like kind of interesting if like, whatchamacallit?
Oh, he called it Red Blood Cells. Sorry, he didn't call it even Red Stripes. He called it Red Blood Cells. And dude,
he did.
He even airbrushed himself into the cover art for the record.
Where is this? Is it on the resource?
Yeah, if you go to Redcross.com, but if you just Google red with the two D's, obviously, because Red Cross, blood cells, it'll come up.
Okay, let me see here. I'm completely intrigued now. I listened to this first in transit, so I didn't have the time to actually look it up, like the meaning. So this is the first time. Oh, wow. Yeah, it is. It's amazing. It's too bad he actually didn't call it Red Stripes, though. I think that'd be hilarious,
too. I think it'd be cool, too. But, like, I don't know why, you know, because now it's like, oh, you can no longer hear this. It's gone forever. I really wish they would, you know, Third Man would put this out on vinyl.
I agree. This totally, for me, should be, like, one of these bizarre, weird, like, you know, arguably novelty, but still kind of, like, interesting, weird, rare records.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure, you know, maybe some of it is tied up in the idea that rights are, you know, whatever, owed to people, or I don't know, however you want to say it, but
I think Jack Black...
Well, no, it says...
Yeah, he owns all the rights.
It says at the bottom... No, but it says at the bottom of this post, there's a post on redcross.com features RBC, the URL, /features/RBC/. Anyway, it says, thank you to the White Stripes for supporting this project.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears that they're aware.
I'm sure they would have been like... Yeah. Are you telling me there's no way that they weren't down with the guy from, you know, like, that's the thing. It's like Steve McDonald. We never did we didn't have footnotes back when Steve McDonald was on this podcast, but, you know,
true,
arguably one of the coolest people ever, you know, legit, like, playing with Black Flag at 11 fucking years old.
Well, I was gonna say, like, I love his interview. I've never met him. Like, obviously you've met him and you've spoken to him, obviously, but I think he's an incredibly interesting guy. I think his interview is incredible that he did. So yeah, he's gonna be a hard one to top.
Like, but he produced a Beck record and a Turbo record.
You what's know? That? Sorry, I missed that last bit.
He produced a Beck record and a Turbo Negro record.
Which Turbo record did he produce?
Scandinavian Leather.
I'm gonna look this up right now. I'm gonna look it up right now.
I think it's Scandinavian
Leather. His production credits.
Yeah, he's done a lot of cool stuff. He's produced a lot of interesting records.
All right, let's see here. Let's see what production credits he has. And he produced the Donnas. Wow. Get Skin Tight. Didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
Very cool.
Well, actually, I did know that because he's got some stories about that session. Not about them being bad or anything, but just them having to deal with not so great situations with the people that were kind of surrounding them at the time.
Okay. Yeah, he produced Party Animals from 2005.
Sort of, that's it.
Yeah, which has perhaps the last Turbo song ever released on it. But yeah, and released at the time by Abacus Recordings, previous friend of the podcast, one only Ray Harkins, released that initially.
I had no idea.
So two connections from two previous friends. Wow. And of course, Burning Heart in Europe released it at the time as well, but in North America rather, which was via, like I said, Ray. But yeah, did not know that. Interesting.
I didn't realize that also he played in the Tater Tots, which is another,
don't know that one,
kind of like LA punk supergroup of sorts.
Nice.
With a crazy lineup of people as well. But yeah, like he is someone who, God, like the Steve McDonald footnote would be a cool one for us to go back and try and do.
Yeah. I think maybe that would require you and it would require like the Daves for sure. And we could have a whole ensemble cast for that one.
Yeah. We could probably get Steve back on for it. Steve is one of my favorite people in the whole world. Like, cause every time I see that guy, he's so supportive and just like such a, like, you know, you're just like, God damn it, dude. Thank you. Yeah. He came out to my stupid wrestling podcast in LA. He doesn't even like wrestling.
Like recently did that?
Yeah. Just like
the last time you were there.
Yeah. He just like came out. He's like, hey man, I just wanted to come see the live podcast. I'm like, damn.
Steve, nice.
What a guy.
There you go. Well,
but
talking point, damn. My friend. But yes, Steve McDonald, the man.
I'm just going through his production credits now.
That's pretty interesting stuff on there.
Imperial Teen.
Yeah.
He did some. He's done some cool stuff. And he played what, with Beck too for a while, I think.
Oh, cool.
So, oh, he did the Fun record too. He did some stuff for that band Fun. Did some stuff for Panic at the Disco. Crazy.
I missed those. Why did I miss these?
It's on the second page of his production credits.
I only did the first page. There we go. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you're right.
He'd be fun okay. to record well, because I think you have so many good stories.
You should do it, my friend.
I should hit him up to record, you know, the imaginary bands that go on in my head. Like, I need something
else. You do have a... It's funny that you brush shoulders with all these people or whatever, and yet none of these like I'm kind of amazed that never came about, the idea of him doing a fucked up record, for example.
What sadomasochistic human being would ever sign up for something that brutal?
Well, I don't know. I'm just putting it out there.
I would love to record with them sometime, but you know, something that doesn't require you know, years of therapy after for the person that recorded it.
Not touching that one. This is all you. Come on.
All right. I guess we should move on to another point.
All right. I'm going to bring this up. I'll take the point, and it's going to be sort of pointless me bringing it up because I don't have a lot to offer on the point, but I feel like it needs to be mentioned.
Yes.
And I'd like to hear your thoughts, because you and I have never discussed this group, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on them and if you know sort of anything you want to impart on the listeners. But it is Jack's immense appreciation for the Meat Puppets.
Yeah.
That's expressed in this episode. And I think this is another one of those groups that gets sort of like weird, like minimal mentions in whatever regarding underground music or whatever, but seemingly the people that are really into this group are really, really into them. Admittedly, not, you know, not that I have nothing against them. I just never, ever got into the Meat Puppets. So I don't really have any offer of substance, but what are your thoughts, my friend?
It's funny because you both, you know, Dave also, David Up mentioned this in his email, that they don't get a lot of love. And I was thinking maybe I'm just in different kind of like circles, like, you know, when it comes to like talking about Meat Puppets. But I thought, you know, I think they're one of those bands that, you know, especially because the Nirvana covers are put on a pedestal when it comes to indie rock or like, you know, whatever type of rock.
Maybe, like, I think that elevated them in name, but I'm with whichever Dave mentioned it. Was it Martin or was it David Up?
David Up.
David Up mentioned it. I'm kind of with it. I just think like they're another one of those groups that my observation is that I don't know the records. I know them to see some of the covers, but I couldn't really tell you anything about them. And, you know, I'm vaguely aware of the group, have been since, you know, whatever, the 90s. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if just somehow never, ever, you know, that Too High to Die record is one that's burned in my memory as far as the look of it. I always remember this poster or whatever for it, but which it was a major label record. I wasn't aware. That's crazy. And mm-hmm. London Records 94. But yeah, I don't know. Like, they're just a group I've never ever been, you know, whatever. Struggling for words. Never been intrigued enough to dive in and actually try to check out like a full record. But I've heard the numerous people. It's like, for me, there's groups like this. Weird enough, like, what was the other one we talked about earlier on the show? You were mentioning one earlier.
A Firehose?
Yeah, sorry. Them, Firehose, Husker Du, however you want to pronounce it. To varying levels, of course, you know, Husker Du is kind of a big one. But, you know, all of these groups are ones that are not quite my wheelhouse, sonically. They weren't my thing as much. Mm-hmm. But when you encounter the people that like usually one of these, tend to like all of them, I find. And like, if not like all of them, they're definitely like a major fan of one of them, big time.
I'm not a huge Firehose fan, if I was being honest. Like, I'm more of a Minutemen fan. I'm definitely a fucking massive Mike Watt fan. And
yeah,
stuff like, but Firehose isn't like as much my thing. But the Meat Puppets, I think like Meat Puppets 2 might be one of the best records to come out of that era. And to me, it's like kind of like a more Neil Young-y Dead Moon. I don't know. That does might not be apt at all.
Yeah, but
they are. It's
that sounds. I haven't heard this record, but I'm going to say that sounds exactly right.
But this record's got like. It, dude, this record's like unbelievable. Like, it's, I really think you should try and just like sit down and listen to it one time and see.
Yeah, I will. Well, I think vibe wise, that like I look at the cover, I'm like, this looks amazing. Lake of Fire, obviously, I'm familiar with the cover.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like it just, it's one of those things where this is the kind of group where I often go like, I wish. Somehow it feels like life is much too short all the time, and I wish I had time to just dive into these records.
Yeah.
Or go back and like take a time machine and like ignore X, you know, like 5 or 10 records I ever got into at a certain point in time that I wasn't too huge on, and I spent more time on something like a record like this. Mm-hmm. So I feel vibe-wise, although I would imagine they're roughly the same age, the funniest part about this cover is I feel like this cover looked like could be a strip cover or something. And so it's got that same sort of summoning, that same aesthetic, which I like immediately.
Yeah, it's like this record,
of course.
I don't know, it's just like the scope of this record's so good. It looks so big.
Yeah, cool. I'm going to check it out for sure. Like that cover again, I know, but do not know this record.
And the first single's great too.
In a Car?
Yeah.
In a Car from 81. What was the label that put this out? World Imitation?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's was like a little label, I guess, from Arizona.
Put out the Monitor record. Uh-huh, yeah. Okay.
A bunch of Monitor records. I think it was the Monitor people that did it. But this is
anyway, weird.
Yeah, like definitely a record that's not that expensive, you know, especially compared to a first press of Meat Men 2 or something, but certainly worth picking up if you're a fan of the band.
I just thought it deserved mentioning. Yeah, they're definitely a band I need to go back and really revisit. Every time I thumb through, like, digging, the times I have hit the Huevos record released in 87 on SST, I immediately always think it's some bizarre Huevos Rancheros record for like 2 milliseconds. And then I realize it's not a Huevos Rancheros record. Anyway,
I feel the exact same way. That's just
my other little tidbit.
Yeah.
Cause it looks like it should be too.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it predates.
Were you a Vandals fan growing up, Chris?
Again, a little bit. I knew what is that record called? The Diarrhea record, whatever it's
Diarrhea.
Called. Live Fast Diarrhea. I knew that one. I believe maybe, let me just look up on the resource here.
Is that the dumbest album title ever? Sorry, dumb's not a very good word to use, but like, is that like the, it's just like not
it's
a
kind of brilliant though.
Brilliant.
It's kind of it's dumb, but it's also kind of brilliant. I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, this is stupid, but, you know, but all their titles are like that. Like, Hitler Bad, Vandals Good is definitely a very apt Vandals record title. And probably the last one I remember.
Did you have the Christmas record with Christmas Time for My Penis?
No. No. I don't own any Vandals records.
No.
Although Peace Through Vandalism is enticing based on the cover art, but I've never owned that. I'm trying to see here. Yeah, no. Yeah, like Fear of a Punk Planet is also a great. I don't know, great. Like they've always been clever enough for me. I have no I've always admired them to a certain degree, but yeah, never really gotten into them proper, for sure. Another group yet again. Oddly enough, all of the hallmarks of Jack Black's punk rock trajectory have never been ones that have been like my big ones. Go figure.
Yeah, you were never a Descendants guy either, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Same deal. Like, you know, of course I know the classic Descendants stuff, but no, not really. And yeah, exactly. It's funny. That's the other big group he mentions.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like I'm cool with it all. It's just, yeah, it's not one that I've been big on. But yeah, Vandals-wise, pardon me. What did you want to bring up in reference to the Vandals other than the fact that I'm not into them?
I just wanted to kind of see what your take on this band was, because they're like a very interesting band, you know, a controversial band if you get into what the old members say, you know, because it's a band that has two very different lineups from that first record that came out in 82 and then that record that came out in 85.
See, I don't know anything about the actual lineup changes either, but I've always had this weird, it's kind of funny you say that, because in the back of my head, maybe I did a little bit reading it somewhere once and I forgot, but it's still a kernel has been there. But the idea of, I always linked them weirdly enough with the Queers somewhere in my brain. I don't know why that is. Maybe because they both have these like absurd, you know, titles and stuff. Having said that, I love the Queers, but yeah, I don't know. Is it the same kind of situation as that, or is it, what is the line of differentiation?
No, it's just Joe Escalante. That's the only member that carries on. And if you're inclined, it's definitely worth a Google to kind of see, you know, what different members have said, but it's the drummer that carries on.
Weird. Okay. I don't know why I wasn't aware of that, but anyway.
And then, like, you know, then they have that record, When in Rome, Do as the Vandals.
Yeah.
Which is where they have, you know, the lineup that I think begins to form that we're all more familiar with.
Gotcha, yeah, from 85.
Well, I guess they still have Steve-O on vocals at this point. Maybe it's the next record where... Because eventually Warren joins the band.
Yeah, I don't know. I just... It's funny. They're definitely, for me, they're a group in title that I think people know more than their records if I had to take a stab at it. But it's crazy when I look how many LPs they have. I would have not thought they had this many. That's nuts.
Yeah.
Maybe four or five, maybe. It's like, nope. Like double that. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know a lot of these records other than, like I said, I knew that the Diarrhea one or whatever, and I remember the Quickening, and I remember thinking the Quickening just seemed like such a strange when it came out. It seemed like a weird, like, of all the things they ever did, that just seemed like a bizarre choice. Like, it's like it was missing a pun or something.
Yeah,
maybe there is a pun there that I'm missing, but it just seemed like, yeah, where's the absurd title? Like, what do you drop the ball on this one? Are you guys trying to go serious? And then nope. Next release and back to it. Nope.
I have so many of those songs stuck in my head forever because I had that CD and like a CD Walkman. And I remember listening to that record just like one time and getting in a delay in the subway. Just like listening to it over and over. So many songs are still stuck in my fucking head.
I feel like the art direction on The Quickening is probably some of the best examples of the worst of the 90s.
Yep, I would aesthetically. Agree. I would agree.
It is actually shocking. I'm just looking at it now going, oh boy. It's got every thing. Go on.
We watched the shuttle launch, read J.D. Salinger. I know a teacher that I wish was on the Challenger. How did this loser get this job?
Oh, to laugh at that in 2018. Oh boy. Yep.
It's like... This record is there's like lit record this, and believe me, that is not the most offensive song on this record.
No, I can tell by the titles there's some wild stuff on it. Yeah,
dude, like this record, if this came out now with these lyrics, it's like, oh my god.
Please tell me the Aging Orange track is directed at the punk band though.
I got the pom hair and I wrote one hit, and that was almost 20 years ago. Keep trying to get.
The fact that you can recite the lyrics is pretty amazing. Yep.
Yeah, because I invented socks and I invented gravy. I invented the cotton gin, but no one ever paid me. But it's like, yeah, it's a diss on Agent Orange because they sued the Offspring for saying that the Offspring had stolen all their riffs.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
What happened with that? Do we know what happened with that?
I'm trying to remember how that lawsuit worked out.
What was the outcome? That's crazy. Which also, as a point of reference for listeners who may not be aware, but this was released by Nitro. And Nitro was not, wasn't that the label run by, what's his face from the Offspring?
Yeah, Dexter.
Dexter from the Offspring, who released this Vandals Wreck. So a bit of beef on wax there,
yep,
as it were.
Throwing it down. Throwing it down.
Throwing it down. That was the get off the air of 96, I guess.
Yeah.
In a weird way. But, yeah, anyway, The Quickening. Did anyone ever think that there'd be this much discussion about The Quickening by Vandals in 2018?
It's amazing how, like, you know, like, because I would have thought the 90s, you know, were a single kind of era, the early 90s. But the Vandals didn't do a single from 85 until 96.
Really? The next one's mid-90s?
Yeah.
Wow. No, that's not true. There's one in 85. Oh, no, sorry, you said that, right?
Yeah, 85,
82, 96. 85, and then 96, yeah. And the 96 one is a split with Assorted Jelly Beans.
Yeah.
That was the return.
Yeah.
On Kung Fu Records, yeah.
Which is their label.
Weird. Huh. I never knew that. I remember hearing that, whatever, the label name, but I didn't know it was theirs.
Mm-hmm. It's Joe's, the drummer's.
Gotcha.
I recently did pick up this Vandals Longfellow, Judy is a Punk, Something to Do in Union, New Jersey split, where Vandals does Ramones covers.
Let me guess, it was not terribly expensive.
If I said that it was in the dollar bin, I would be telling the truth. But it goes for like that, although on the COG, so maybe that was a good find.
Yeah, it looks also like a 90s record, but in a totally different way than The Quickening does.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. Definitely makes sense. It's got a
cover. Like, it looks like a flyer from the 90s, whereas like The Quickening looks like, you know, a professional, whatever, release.
Yeah, like it looks like something that like someone who had read Ray Gun magazine would have done.
That's very true. That is a great observation, and only losers like me would get that.
That's why I love
people out there.
That's why I love doing this.
I still have no joke. I definitely have at least one ray gun behind me.
I wish
I did. I almost want to pull it out because it's so true. Like the offensive, like blatant graph design wanking in that magazine was incredible. It was like Steve Vai level guitar version of like visual graph designers. So bad. Like so bad.
So like, it was,
I don't know who they let get away with that, but wow.
Yeah. It was just like, well, that was the era of like just like hyper design. Like just before like every single person you met became a graphic designer.
Yep.
And computers made that stuff easy, right? So the people that were early to the computer game were like all of a sudden like the kings of graphic design.
Yep. Raygun, wow. That was a great reference. That was well worth being up at this hour for this much.
Well, I don't think I'm gonna top that myself, but is there any other points you wanted to get to, Chris?
I think we kind of touched on all of them. I mean, I wish I could have offered some more myself on some of these points, like regarding the groups I never have delved into enough, admittedly. There was one thing I thought we should touch on because I hadn't seen it, and I can't remember in the interview if you mentioned having seen it, but that Descendants documentary, which is called Filmage,
I know, I haven't seen it. Tristan owns it, too. And keeps saying, you gotta come over and watch it. And so I will see it because, yeah. And I can only imagine how awkward that exchange with Bill Stevenson that he's describing was, given how some exchanges Bill Stevenson and I have gone.
Well, what's very funny is I have also had exchanges with Bill Stevenson. Mine have been completely opposite of both of yours. So,
No, I was just going to say, like, I've definitely had amazing experiences with Bill. Like, Bill's a great, you know, like a legend, like legit a legend.
Yes.
But he also, if he wants, can make a situation awkward for you.
My experience was different because it was just via other band endeavors. I don't know if it was just that group he was in at the time or whatever with the Zach in it and what have you. But yeah, it was just different. He had a very, very like fatherly feel to her, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I have a different experience. But anyway, Filmage, yeah, I haven't seen it yet. Wow, it came out in 2014. That's bad that I had. And this long, even though as explained earlier, I'm not a giant, or 2013 actually came out, but I've always been curious to see it because I feel like these are the things that would make me have a greater appreciation at times. Again, not that I don't like the Descendants, I've just never been a big guy for their music, so to speak. Yeah, anyway, just thought we should shout that out. I don't really know what we offered other than me saying the title, but go on.
And I think the only thing we should maybe touch on would be briefly getting into something with Jack Black's band that he mentions.
Sure. What do you want to go on with that?
I got to hear this recording.
Yeah, you had brought this up to me. I'm not aware of the film or the song offhand, but I don't know. I'm curious. I find it interesting that it seems to be that he has the songs or whatever. Like when you bring it up, yep. Doesn't he basically say he'll trade you for, do you, by the way, sidebar, do you have You're in Trouble recordings?
I would be lying if I said I didn't have a recording of You're in Trouble or two.
Cause anyway, I'm just laughing when he wanted to
that right now. And in front of me, there is the You're in Trouble 4-track 1995 recording, which features, Journey to the End of the Year, East Bay cover, Church of the Sexual Deviance is the name of the song, and Down and Out on the Floor is the name of the song. This is probably the worst music ever committed to tape. Right here, what you're hearing. But like, thankfully, I'm the archivist, so you know that will be safely here forever. Whereas These two tapes one day might get a reissue or a bootleg, as some people like to call them. And that would be the As One demo and the Board of Education demo.
Have you heard? I don't have either. I tried to get that last one. No, I tried to get it off Sandy and she had sold it out from under my grip just moments earlier at a punk rock flea market, as it were, some years ago.
Well, it's a Board of Education. Real punks wear their safety pins through their testicles. Now, this is the first lineup of Career Suicide.
Yes.
Which is Jonah and Martin, like, way before they would wind up being Career Suicide. Like, Career Suicide started with a completely different lineup of people before these guys would find their way into it. But there are some insane songs on this. Put that safely back in the vault for now.
Yeah, tried to get it. As One, of course.
You As One speak was on a much better name than Scare Tactic.
I don't know. Scare Tactic is a pretty good name. I don't have a problem with that. No, I like Scare Tactic better, actually.
Really? I like As One. As One!
Well, obviously the name is a great nod, but I just mean, like, Scare Tactic's a pretty good name, actually. I think it's... I back that as a name. I just don't. I think like the 7-inch doesn't live up to what I would imagine the band was like, or maybe it does. I don't know.
Chris, have you ever seen the Fuck Jonah tape?
Yeah, I have it.
Isn't that might be some of the worst art ever?
It's pretty.
It's so fucking bad.
I remember it being quite juvenile, but The only thing I had is that it's like, I believe it's like a fluorescent cover.
Yeah,
is it like a fluorescent paper?
Yeah, for this like
kind it's been a while since I looked at it. I have them packed away.
Well, you should take a look at it next time because it makes it look like a demo for like a Treble Charger ripoff band that would be given to you at a Battle of the Bands.
What's super funny about this is someone has put this on the resource, believe it or not.
Fuck, Jonah's on the resource?
You can look this up. I can't believe it. I just thought, I'm going to look it up just to see. And of course, it is here. You are correct. And it is bright yellow. But I feel like mine's a bright green, but maybe I just have a bad memory of it. And it has the songs, but it has A1 to 7, and it has them all untitled. And then someone actually, not too long ago, January 2017, I guess a little while ago now, but anyway, and they're asking for the track names. Please let them know. I've been looking for them. Well, there you go. 2 have, 1 want. That's 50% people.
Oh, and doesn't there even have go. Any connection and two, like to Career Suicide?
No, it doesn't have anything. No, but we can fix that. Oh, and so if you want to look on the resource for Fuck Jonah, it's there, folks. Enjoy.
And the Career Suicide Discogs also doesn't have any of their tapes.
None of them? No, I haven't looked that one up.
No, the Career Suicide one has none of their demos. I think there's just the
That's
two.
That's bizarre. I don't have like the original one or whatever, if there is. Although I've heard that the original one is bad, or no, the original one's very good.
No, it's not.
Original one's very good. No, it's not.
No, the original one's not very good. That was like before Martin started having vocals. So he's just like,
they didn't have. Yeah, you're right. They don't have any on here. That is weird. I have this weird like promo tape thing they did for. I think it was before Attempted Suicide, or maybe just after. Anyway.
What's on that?
I'm gonna go on a hot take here and say the best thing that they ever did recorded was Invisible Eyes on Feral Ward, 2005, Career Suicide. You heard it here first.
No, SARS.
100%.
That SARS single, like that's favorite. Like a, no. That's like a
trans- SARS is incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a transcendent moment.
It is, but Invisible Eyes is the best thing they ever did, in my humble opinion. Anyway. I don't know how we got off on this topic here. What do we start on?
Oh, we were talking about You're in Trouble recordings, and that got us.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Fuck Jonah recordings and stuff.
There we go. I just love that it's on the resource. It's amazing.
It's awesome. I wonder, are the Mad Men demos on the resource?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to look
the
up Sox here.
Sox is on the resource, so yeah, it's probably Mad Men is definitely on the resource.
Oh, weirdly enough, though, that yeah,
the tape came out in Europe.
A demo, yeah, official, yeah.
Oh, weird.
And from 2010. Wow, it's funny that how old. Like, it's not old, but you know, 18 years ago. That's wild.
Yeah.
Crazy. And I recently just scored that Crank into Sonic Youth cassette from the one and only Ben Cook. Shout out. So I'm happy to have acquired that as well.
Oh, I don't even know if I have that.
Well, love Bizarre demos. They're great. And if anyone has an OG F Mutations demo, which I think originally came out as a cassette, if I'm not mistaken.
What are you looking for? Which one?
The original Def Mutations demo tape.
Oh.
Because I have the 7-inch. But if anyone has that from 08, again, turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com. Wow. There's some have sold on here. Impressive. But yeah. Another cool, weird, bizarro Jonah fucked up related thingy or whatever.
I don't even have
that. I don't know how. I don't have that. I have the 7-inch reissue thing, but I don't have the other one.
Oh, wait. Okay. I don't know. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
You probably do. I can't see you not having this stuff. I don't have the as one, so there you go. You can humble brag about that right now.
Yeah. that's maybe not Jonah's highest watermark.
Anyway, go on. What do you want to touch on here?
I'm exhausted.
All right. I meant we're exhausting the topic, but yes, as well.
Okay, I'm exhausted too. is that, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think we covered it. I'm trying to think if there's anything else Let me just look over one more time to make sure there's nothing that we're missing. Yeah, nothing I think that we couldn't get to in little tidbits here and there. I think the main ones we've touched on.
Awesome.
So I'm good with it, unless you can think of anything
else. I'm good too, buddy. All right. Everyone, once again, find me on social media, at LeffordDamian. Chris, how do they get in touch with us here?
TurnedOutAPunkFootnotes@gmail.com.
And that is it, everyone. Thank you very much for listening to the show.